And welcome back to another episode of This Is Africa. My name is Adama.
Welcome back. My name is Amiri.
Hi, guys. I'm Tamba.
Hello, everyone. I'm Lord.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Okay, excellent, guys. Welcome.
Yeah, we did not all co-sign the claps. But, you know, great touch. I guess, like, kind of just topping into it. I mean, our convo today is about the African diaspora. This one's a little different, though. I guess we'll be reflecting a bit more, not just looking at any particular situation and discussing. After some research, I think we've figured out that we've got about hundreds of millions of Africans living outside of the continent and, I guess, seeking opportunities elsewhere. But before we get into the, I guess, the gist of it in the haystack, let's allow Marcus Garvey to lead our conversation. The great man once said, "A people without the knowledge of their past history, origin, and culture is like a tree without roots," end quote. This quote kind of spoke to me, and I thought it would lead us straight into our conversation. It kind of led me to thinking about it. And when we speak about the African diaspora, I guess we need to speak about why we're even speaking about the African diaspora in the first place, why it even exists. Mm-hmm. And for me, when I hear things like opportunities and all these different factors being discussed, I kind of just think that opportunities to a degree can be sold, and they can be made to look appealing and unappealing. And I think the opportunities that our rich land has been made to look otherwise, has been made to look like anything other than good and prosperous. And I think this kind of starts with colonialism. I think it starts with, like, propaganda spewed out of the mouth of colonialists, and the colonizers, as they would call. And I guess just kind of touching into mostly just how when they arrived, they spend a lot of time doing.
They were very strategic.
Yeah, they were very strategic in being able to create propaganda that they would, I guess, put out there, reflecting that the culture and the opportunities that were in Africa were not stable enough, for lack of a better word. I just weren't good enough and needed to be redefined and made to look differently.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, I definitely like that quote which you stated earlier with Marcus Garvey, because he was definitely a person that was very critical and serious about the return of Africa and people knowing and understanding their roots, and some words of wisdom of people that don't understand how deep their roots are, can't understand how high the tree could grow, you know. So yeah, our colonizers, Europeans, the westernizers, you could say, were very, very strategic and instrumental in dividing and conquering and making Africans also African slaves that eventually led into the African diaspora, not understanding where they came from and how important the continent is to them. You know, so dealing with the divide and brainwashing, and you could even add in religion played a factor in it, colonizing people and have this stigma of, like, saying that Africa is a place of poverty, a place of hunger, there's no opportunities. The people are uncivilized. The people don't have this type of progressive mindset. You know, kind of like dehumanizing Africa. And Africa has centuries, years old. Could probably say by more than that.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, these westernizers have definitely helped paint a picture that Africa is not the place to be and elsewhere is the place to be. Yeah. While extracting resources to help develop their countries and build up wealth for their countries where Africans feel like they need to leave.
Yeah, I think obviously that coupled with the fact that they then took us, put us in ships, and then sent us to different parts of the world, I think that's played a role in cementing, like, that way of thinking has cemented itself almost in our people. And to this day, people are just, you know, they're still living with that mentality. They're still waking up and they're still telling themselves opportunities are elsewhere. And I think that's kind of how we've gotten to our convo today. I mean, yeah, I feel, you know.
History with Amiri was great. I like that. That
was smooth Amiri.
We should
no history with Amiri. Yeah. That's a new catchphrase.
Yeah, history with Amiri. That was a good segue. But yeah, for this episode, I thought it was a great segue from the last one because, you know, we kind of want to tell a story through our episodes now.
Yeah.
And last time we talked about, you know, the African students, and we thought this was a great time to speak about the diaspora. You know, and as Adama and Amir just got us into the topic, I want to start off with asking, you know, why do we leave Africa in the first place to look for opportunities elsewhere?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the things that while I was doing my research kind of popped up a lot, you know, a lot of I guess the top two, maybe three, colonization was one, which you guys just covered. The second one was people, you know, getting away from war, seeking asylum, refugees. That was a big part of it. And or just getting away from the poor conditions their countries in, their respective countries in, whichever African country that is. And the third one being studying, going, leaving the country to get better educated. And in the hopes to return one day.
Yeah, really quick. I just wanted to throw in there, like, I just because you're speaking about it, and I think just like for the audience's sake of understanding, like, obviously with those reasons, mm-hmm. it correlates to time periods because you can correlate all those reasons to like a different time and a different reason why people
mm-hmm.
continuously don't want to come back and or are coming back.
Yeah.
So yeah, really quick. Just wanted to throw that
in. Yeah, for sure. And before I give the mic to Lord, I want to kind of highlight the difference between the two diasporas because I feel like sometimes people don't understand the difference between when we say African diaspora, what is African diaspora?
Not even knowing there's two to begin with.
There's two to begin with.
I recently found that out.
Yeah, welcome, Amiri. But there's two diasporas. There's the continental diaspora and there's the African diaspora. The African diaspora is the one that is cited in the African Union, their definition of it. So it's basically, it's consisting of people of African origin living outside of the continent, irrespective of their citizenship and nationality, and who are willing to contribute to the development of the continent and the building of the African Union. So that could be just African Americans living in America who have never set foot in Africa are considered the African diaspora.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, former slave families who mm-hmm. you know
mm-hmm.
are African diaspora. So
if any part of your roots
any part of your roots is from Caribbean people are African diaspora,
or if you identify
Central
as
America,
such,
South,
you
know, America, South America,
we everybody's African diaspora,
even in Europe.
Which honestly for with that definition I think it's a bit weak in my opinion. So that's why me having grown up in Africa I tend to go with the continental diaspora definition. So those continental diaspora is people who have the African or African countries nationality who are living outside of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So at least one parent has the nationality and is living outside of Africa. So I would consider myself a African continental diaspora. I think you, Lord, maybe continental diaspora, mm-hmm. who you have lived in Ghana, Adama as well, your parents have lived. Amiri, you...
Yeah,
you would be African diaspora just to give people a sense of. Lord, go ahead.
Oh no, so I was just going back to Adama's point in terms of like things changing in time periods in regards to why people leave and why people either come back or don't come back. So back then, like we were looking at things in like the late 50s, early 60s to the 70s. That's when a lot of revolutions was happening. So for example, like a lot of first presidents of many countries in Africa were all educated abroad. Mm-hmm. Like the first president of Ghana was studied in UPenn, studied Lincoln University, and
shout out Nkrumah.
Also studied at City Law too. So there right there, like there's a purpose behind it in a sense, quote unquote. Like I don't know Nkrumah that well to know whether he went to school abroad specifically for I'm gonna come back and, you know, liberate my people from from colonial powers. I don't know whether it was intent, but he did bring all of the knowledge that he learned in studying abroad and was able to literally change the landscape and the and the well-being of the country once Ghana got its independence too. Same can be said for a lot of different countries in Africa too as well. But also, again, going to Adama's point, things kind of change over time in terms of like now, back then mostly was to educate myself to learn how to liberate my people, because at the end of the day, all these infrastructures and all these political or governmental infrastructure that was in my homeland was created by the white man. So being able to learn the white man's game and not only play it better, but also know how to disarm it and be able to use it to my own advantage was something that was very, very prominent and very important to people back then. Now it's a little bit different in terms of like, as Tamba said, better opportunities, as Tamba said, you know, fleeing war. So I think it kind of like changes as time goes on, going to like both your points. And also in terms of coming back, that also kind of changes with time, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I'm glad you brought it up and kind of cleared it up. The mentality has changed, you know.
Exactly.
When our parents were coming up, you know, I know for me personally, all I could hear is my grandfather, even to this day, he would tell me, oh, whatever you do, always come back to your country. Never forget about your roots. You're coming back to help your country. Why are you guys not back? You know, you go a couple of years without going back to the country. He's asking questions. Mm-hmm. You know, don't forget where you're from. Always come back. So their mentality was, there was this sense of nationalism, you know. They were very patriotic, and they always wanted to come back to their country to help. As is for us now, I mean, how many years removed from them is kind of different. We don't, me personally, you know, it's been ingrained in me, and I always say this, I always want to go back. But for some people living in the diaspora, some of them may have never been there. Some of them just look at it as their country as a vacation place and are not as deeply rooted. You know, they don't have these roots that we were talking about. So some of them just don't know why should I go back? I have nothing. That's not, it's their parents' country. It's not their country at that point. You know what I mean?
Basically.
Yeah, but even since I support what you guys were saying, so I know Lord mentioned earlier that during the 1950s, 1960s, that was an era of a lot of revolutionists that were wanting to like be very anti-West, but more nationalistic about their country. And that mindset and ideologies trickled down into the Caribbean, even like in places of like Latin America and South America. But, like even like Trinidad and Tobago, Dr. Eric Williams, he was the first black prime minister of Trinidad and Tobago, and he studied in England and came back. And those same ideologies of, let's say, Kwame Nkrumah, these other revolutionists, he implemented that within Trinidad to be very independent, not relying on their parent country, you know, making trade. I believe they were even making trades with, like, other African nations, too. So, like, that era was, like, an era of progression and independency, you know, believing nationalistic about your country, you know.
Question: do you guys think the biggest opportunity is education? And if not,
what else? The opportunity in coming to a different
to moving to going somewhere, because we're talking about some of the, I guess, some of the biggest leaders in history, and we're speaking about how they all basically were either influenced to, advised to, and or chose to go educate themselves somewhere else to come back and to run their country. So is that a matter of needing to, I guess, learn the way? Because obviously we speak about the way Western control exists, and we speak about the way that their like structure was kind of imprinted. So is that more so a reflection of that Western control and like going back to figure out, okay, we need to run our system in the way that the Westerners have set it up, so we need to go there to learn their skills and then come back here? Or is it a matter of, oh no, we just need to be educated like them in order to run a system in general?
That's a good, great question.
You want to take a crack at it before I do?
I was gonna say that it has changed. You know, before it was definitely education, because governments actually used to sponsor, like African government used to sponsor their
students,
their citizens or their people and students to come study in order to come back. And a lot of people were benefiting from those programs. But of course, you know, when you speak about Africa, regimes change, you know, focuses change. And when some of those students, when they go away, what are they coming back to? And even today, that's the question. What are we going back to? What is there left for us to go back to? Yeah. You know, what are we fighting for? You're going to leave your comfort of your home in the United States to go live a life that is uncertain, to take, you're taking a huge pay cut, you know, to go back to what, live in conditions that you may not be used to. So, I mean, it is a, to your point, it's tricky. It's very tricky. I think before it was education. Now it's more, if I go back there, what am I going back to?
Yeah, I definitely agree with what Tom was saying. And I also had basically a similar answer to him, because it's more so of like, we try to replicate something that worked, and there's no problem in replicating what worked. But as Thomas said, like, things change, times change. And back then, the focus was very different as to trying to replicate something that's already worked, but the focus is now has changed. Because again, as Thomas said, like, what are you coming back to? Because back then, those leaders knew what they were coming back to in terms of like, okay, I'm coming back to, you know, help my people get out of colonialism.
Yeah, we're fighting for what cause.
We're fighting for our cause. So now, again, going back to Thomas' question, it's more so like, yo, like, you know, what am I coming back to? Yeah, we're trying to replicate what has already been done and what has worked, but now the focus has changed. So since the focus has changed, why replicate something that has a different focus?
Also, I also have a question for you as well. Oh, yeah, by the way, we have somebody coming in, you know, who asked, who has actually returned, who's going to give us his input on how life has been for him. So stay tuned for that. But my question that I wanted to ask just now is, what is the appeal to going back? Like, what is appealing to us of going back, other than, to me, it's, this is what I want my life goal to be, to help my country, and not only help, but to be part of the growth of it. You know, you know, we major in international relations. That's what we want to do, becoming a diplomat or being in the foreign service. You know, that's my goal. But for somebody who may not be interested in those type of things, what's the appeal to go back? You know, maybe some people don't want to go back and help. They want to go back and just live. So what's the appeal to them? Because it comes back, what are you going back to?
Yeah.
You know, if you look at it and all the money and all the power is at the elite level, you know, and it's supposed to be on a system based on meritocracy, where if you work hard, you're going to get to where you're supposed to be. But everything is stuck at the elite level. The families, people's families are the ones reaping the benefits of the working class. So what are you going back to if you don't have those family ties in the elite? You don't have an uncle that's a minister, an aunt that has her own business. The large amount of people that do return to Africa are people who go there to invest, to have investment projects, you know, to gain wealth. So as a normal, or somebody listening to this podcast, somebody who doesn't have those means, for example, and who is not interested in going back to quote unquote helping, what's the appeal for them to go back, other than visiting on vacation or something?
I was about to say that visiting or vacationing. Because, wait, before that, I'll let Adamo answer first before I do.
Okay. I mean, first of all, a couple things come to my brain when you think what you say. I think of, there's, Vic Mensa was on a TED Talk, and he was speaking about reuniting the African diaspora, and like this conversation about, I guess just from his point of view as an American, who is African American and who identifies in that sense. And one thing he used a couple of these different ones, but one that I can remember off the top of my head is like, why is there a nation in Africa rich in diamonds but not rich from diamonds, you know? And then I kind of tie that into TK's question of why are we going back? Well, for one, I think a lot of people right now, the first thing is you can't go back without knowing what's there. I think there's a responsibility just from the person situation to understand, first of all, you're not going back to Africa, you're going back to a specific place in Africa. And then it is what it about that particular place that you're going to, are you going back for? If I'm speaking about myself and I speak about Senegal from my experience and like growing up, why would I go back? If I was to go back, it's three things that I think, because a couple of them we share: help my people, help growth of my country in whatever way that I can. Well, in politics, I think we all kind of feel like we have a little bit of a, you know, a higher, you know, calling for something to help in some impactful way with people. But then one thing I thought about from my own personal thing that probably I don't share with you guys is kind of to be closer to another version of home for me, you know? And just because I guess I've not necessarily been separated from this place, from this other home of mine, but I haven't had the ability to experience as much as where I am now. And when TK speaks about his grandpa earlier and like stuff like that, like that trickles down to even now with even my mother to this day. Like every summer, every winter, every spring break vacation, we can set up. You want me to call these people? We can. Flight is not too much to go to Senegal. We gotta go. We gotta go. And like for her, it's like, and I think part of it is like, oh, okay. By definition, maybe you can use your turn when you said like vacation, vacation place. I thought that was really powerful, by the way. Can you say vacation place with people using it like that? But I think for her, it's like, yeah, you can go there for vacation, but in doing so, you pick up so many other things. Like you can, you know, bring yourself back and you can do these different, you can connect in this way, you can do this, you can do that. You can apply yourself differently. And I think that's her subtly setting me up to do the other things, like helping my people and helping grow my country.
To reconnect into your roots as you...
You know what I'm saying? And that's her, from her perspective, that's her envisioning what my role would look like. That's not necessarily how she personally feels like what her going back is for and her reasons. You know what I'm saying? Knowing that I was born here and in my experience a little differently, that's her envision. That's what she envisions that I could do.
Yeah,
but I'm sure her thing and what she's doing is different. Like I know my father and a couple of my uncles recently from here. They were peanuts is very important in Senegal. Rich and I guess the market business is pretty successful. So they recently, like 2-3 months ago, opened a peanut plantation, and they're running the business from here. So I have two uncles in Rhode Island. I have my dad here. I think I have another uncle in North Carolina, and then there's like a couple of cousins stuff that they like partnered together to like do this, and they're doing that from here. And if they would do it from there if they could, but for whatever reasons, obviously they can't necessarily. But that's like, you know,
that's a joint.
Look at their reasons are completely different. Like, you know what I'm saying? And they're doing it.
See,
joint venture.
That
yeah,
joint venture. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the point I was saying earlier. But most people that do return to Africa is people that invest, and that's one of those investments. You get those investments to gain wealth, and then hopefully you can use that to build a life there.
Wait. Sorry, just to be clear, just so I feel like just so the audience can like hear when I talk about it. So answering your question, I think like the answer to your question is just like, it's just understanding that people can't go back without knowing what's there for them.
Yeah.
And that's my idea.
Of course. I agree with that. I think the first step, and that's big on the year of return of Ghana we saw in 2019, pre-COVID, they were just saying, they were giving visas actually to Americans, African-Americans who had no ties to Ghana at all, to come back to just see for themselves, see what they can do. Like you were saying, knowledge, gaining knowledge of where I'm going in the first place. I think that's big, but also stepping back just a tad bit on why we leave as well is because, you know, the expectation. In France, he's sending me, so just to give the audience kind of a perspective on what's going on, and the African diaspora is very important to Africa because of the remittances, the money they send back, right? So the people who are living in Africa see money coming in from their families
big money, by the way, in
the West, right? Which the currency, obviously, is the exchange rate is higher, right? So when they see that money, like, oh, this person's making this money, what are they doing, you know? Then they want to come. That's the expectation. Oh, they're living good over there. I want to come to their whatever country. It could be America. It could be France. It could be Belgium. It could be the UK. It could be anywhere. You know, that's what you see. But next thing you know, that person could be, not to be down on anything, but that person could be struggling here. You know, they could be for example, a restaurant worker, or they could be a security guard, or they could have
working in a hotel.
Yeah, or they could have a big time job as well. Like, I'm not saying we're not educated enough to do that, but what I'm saying is that when they come here, those are the jobs they're working. So their expectation before coming here is, I'm going to come in here, I'm going to be living the life. But you come here, you see that, oh, you know, you wouldn't work. Some people in Africa would never imagine working in a nursing home.
Or cleaning somebody's house.
Or cleaning somebody's house. But you come here, these are the jobs, the quick money you can make that are available.
Mm-hmm. So you mean like the middle class?
Yeah,
like
middle class. Obviously some people come here, they're educated. They do that job back there. They come here, they get a job at, I don't know, for example, the UN or, you know, anywhere, you know? So those are the expectations versus the reality. You know, the expectation is I'm going to live this great life, while in maybe in Africa, you don't have to deal with these things. Some people are living in huge houses. They have maids and they don't know what it really is once you get here. Mm-hmm. Now, that transition when you get here is the reality. So my point being that the reason some people want to leave is because they see this extravagant life people are, or their families are living in said country, mm-hmm. like I say, it could be America, anywhere, and they want that for themselves. They watch movies, for example.
That's a big, Western culture.
Yeah, Western culture. I get an iPhone. My iPhone's old. I got a new one. I'm sending my iPhone back. Oh, wow, you guys get iPhones there. I want to see that. Not that there's no iPhones in Africa. Obviously, Nintendo, there are iPhones and stuff like that. But once you send it back, wow, this is so expendable to them. If I go there, I'm going to get something of this nature as well. Yeah. You know, like
a lot of times they'll make you order stuff from here.
From here.
Like they'll like it's not there. Like there's plenty of iPhones. They'll ask you to get the iPhones here and then send them over there. Mm. All those different type of things.
So those are some of the factors that the expectation versus reality factor I wanted to highlight. Now, if you guys wouldn't mind, I would like to get into our second question. What stops people from going back? Why is the return rate so low for the African diaspora going back to Africa? Because if you look at the data, I checked out the CIA fact book. I know you don't really like the CIA over here, but I checked out the fact book on the return rate. And it was kind of hard to find too. I don't think they keep much of statistics on this, or maybe I just didn't do enough digging. But for example, I was able to find Miley's, and it's 75% of students that get student visas to come to America, for example, don't return to Africa. Mm-hmm. And that is why sometimes it's hard for the U.S. to give students visas, because you don't return, you don't come back. You come here and you stay in the U.S. So I was able to find my country. I know South Sudan has a high migrant rate as well. I mean, South Sudan, we know, is going through a lot of trouble. You know, the country is not doing the best. You know, there have been numerous coups, military dictators there, and a lot of people fleeing. The refugee crisis, I think, mainly the big part of it in Africa is from people coming from South Sudan. So my question again, why is the return rate so low for the people that leave?
Well, like you said earlier, one, there are more opportunities elsewhere, and there is more money to make. Or there are more money to make. Like, say if a student leaves like a country in Africa and goes to study elsewhere, and say they graduate and they land a job, say they study computer science, there's an influx of computer science jobs within Americas or like Europe and stuff. There may not be an influx of jobs like that in Africa, you know. So
I would like to challenge that. I would like to say there is.
Well, now but
there is a need for it.
There's a need for it, but like if you're just graduating and like you just landed a job, you kind of just starting off your career.
Yeah.
You know, so like why leave your career to go back home, where it's like that may hinder you for your personal growth.
Even touching into that, where like my head goes to, this is because everything we're talking about is so multifaceted. There's plenty of reasons. We talk about how there's reasons like in between time periods. We talk about there's reasons in between just groups in general.
Yeah. Each people in the diaspora just don't want to go back.
Exactly. There's just so many different reasons. Mm-hmm. We come from different countries in Africa. The problems in Mali are not the same problems in Senegal or whatever, vice versa. You know what I mean? Like, so people are going to leave with different reasons and not going to want to come back for different reasons. Yeah, so definitely. Like, but one reason that I think about in particular is like the transferring of those credentials or stuff like that. Like when you speak about college and when you speak about graduating and getting stuff, like, for example, when I think about even like passports and traveling, a passport from Senegal can get me only, but so far into so many countries, but my American passport can get me almost everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Like, those are little luxuries people are not trying to give up. You know what I mean? Yeah, even when you talk about degrees, you talk about computer science degrees, and getting my computer science degree in America can get me a job in plenty of places all around the world.
Six-figure payday.
Yeah, my computer science degree from a community college in Africa, in Senegal, even Senegal specifically, will not get me through the door. Mm-hmm. In a lot of Western places.
Yeah, but your goal is not to come to the West at that point. I'm talking about in Senegal. It will get you through the door in places in Senegal, depending on how.
But even tying into that, I think there's something to be said about the way that those structures that give you those credentials are like set up to help you succeed. When you finish, how immediately can you get that six-figure job?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, you're not making six figures in
when you finish, how immediately can you get that high position? But like the battle post, like graduating and stuff like that, when you get into the market battle is difficult too because there aren't that many seats available for those high positions. Obviously, you can become a billionaire. We have African billionaires that exist, so you don't need to leave Africa to become just as wealthy as people in anywhere else across the world. To TK's point, you can make money everywhere. But that's the avenues they give you and all those different things, once you see them, to answer your question, because right now we're speaking about like, why don't you want to leave after you've already experienced this? Mm-hmm. And when you see this and then you start educating yourself as to what this can further get you, because once you leave one place, you're not opposed to migrating. So you can go wherever you want in the world. Yeah. And if you want that type of mentality, once you see it, it's like, okay, the avenues are endless here. Like, I can't give up both. There's people who do dual citizenship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you tell them to pick one, the American passport might win a lot of the times. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. Because it definitely brings a lot of opportunity. And just to give the audience a little bit about the six-figure pay that we're saying, I'm going to just list off the GDP per capita of some of our countries here. In Senegal, it's $1,400 GDP per capita. In Mali, it's $858, which it's gotten better, guys. It used to be at 400, so we're coming up, you know.
And since
the '60s. In Ghana, $2,300.
Chill.
But then that brings up the point you were saying. If you leave here, these are the wages you're going. I mean, obviously you're going to be making more than that, but these are the wages you're going back to. You're no longer looking at six figure paydays. You're looking at $40,000 for a year, and that's how much
you can make. May or may not correlate to your living.
You can make a good living with that there.
Yeah, you can make a good living with that.
But could you, with the money here, if I'm here and like Adama's family members are doing, I'm gonna start my plantation. I'm gonna build a house here with the money I have.
Yes.
Yeah, you could.
You know, you could prepare your retirement.
Yeah.
Before going back, and I think that's what a lot of people do when if they do choose to go back. You know, obviously, like we said, it's changing from generation to generation. I think my father's generation, their idea is I'm coming back regardless of what it is. This is my
country.
That's
also pre-arriving and seeing the opportunities. Because there's only but so much education you have until you arrive. And then you expand your education even further. And then you're like, oh, dang, I know I said I was going to leave, right?
No, but I think that's our generation's doing that. My father's generation, they're going back regardless. Like he's back there right now. Like he doesn't care.
Yeah. Okay, but don't you think really quickly before I even let Lord jump in here if he wants to? But like, there's something about when they're thinking about going back, they're thinking about transferring the wealth they were making here in some relevance to making that over there. It's not like I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna give up all the things that I've gotten. Yeah. Like, no, I'm gaining here, so I can take that back with me.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, okay, that has a part to do with it. But there is like nationalistic. I'm going back to help my country. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's less to do with
they'll accept whatever happens if they go back. But they're leaving for a reason. They're not trying to leave the things they got.
They're leaving to go help their country.
And I doubt people will give
and the thing, the resources they get over there, they're not going to leave them there. No. They're going to do everything in their power to take those things that they got with them and bring it there.
And bring it, for sure.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, even if you're in like a Western country too, it's hard for a person to give up their luxuries. Like income, housing, whatever. They may have a car, a nice car. You're going back to kind of like, I wanna say like a mediocre lifestyle, but you know, like when you're going back,
you're going back to a place that makes it harder to have the same beautiful lifestyle as you did.
Yeah,
it's definitely cheaper though. It's definitely cheaper. I'll tell you that, to have that
relative to cost of living
lifestyle. Yeah, that you have.
But also too is just, well, again, like it's also for me, I feel like it's subjective and preference for each, like for every individual.
Yeah, of course.
In terms of like, why they're not going back. Another thing, what I'll say that some people don't go back is just dealing with some of the nonsense that you have to deal with in terms of going back. For example, like let's say in terms of security, Security in all sense of security, like actual security in terms of like making sure that, you know, your streets are safe and like, you know, there's no foreign or domestic threat that is like hindering your lifestyle. But also just economic security in terms of like, let's say if I want to create a business over there, like what is the business landscape like where it's like I don't get bamboozled or like not get into a Ponzi scheme where it's like I think I'm putting my money into the right place. Like, for example, like if we talk about a very dicey situation as in like buying land in Ghana. That's a very, if you don't know the right people or in the right space or like, you know people who do things legitimately, you might buy something where it's like, you think it's yours, but it's not really yours. Mm-hmm. They don't sell it to him, her, and her. You feel me? Yeah. And it's like, and you think you got it, but not really so because there's no policies in place that will protect you against that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or even just the work culture. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you might go back where it's like the work culture that you experience in, let's say, the States, where it's like, even if it's a snow day, you better show up to work. Where it's like, that is not basically, I'm not saying that like Africans are not hardworking. I don't want people to ever like, you know.
We work the hardest.
Like, but I get what you're trying to say. We're hardworking, but it's more so of like,
the governmental aspect of it. How's the
and also just with people too as well in terms of like just because I'm from the States and I come down there, like in terms of the people who live over there, it's more so like gimme, gimme, gimme. But it's not a gimme, gimme, gimme world when I'm in the States. Is we really worked hard for it. So when I come there and I'm trying to like do things, I don't want, just because you're my friend, I'm just going to give you this.
Yeah.
Just because we cool. No. Like, I'm giving you this because nepotism. Mm-hmm. You know? I'm giving you this because you obviously qualified for it or you do good work. So I have confidence in me giving it to you. You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes it could get very, in some cases, family political, where it's like, oh, your uncle came by and he's doing this and that, but don't want to help out the family. Mm-hmm. But hold on.
I heard that before. I heard that in my family.
But hold on. Is this person actually capable of doing the work? Because I'm not just about to be out here and just give it to anybody and just, you know, in the saying of just helping out the family. Like, no. If the family want to be great, I want great people in the family to make this business that we're trying to do even greater. You know what I'm saying? Not just giving it to you just because I want to give it to you. Like, no, earn your stripes.
And I'm glad you actually said that, Lord. That brings us to another point that Lord just highlighted a little bit, is being accepted.
Exactly.
Being accepted. When once you leave, you know, because you become kind of like, we call ourselves, we make jokes about it all the time. Oh, we're Americanized now. They see you as American. Like, you're no longer the Senegalese or Ghanaian or Trinidadian or Malian. You're American now. So now they almost look at you as like you forgot about yourself a little bit. And I mean, to me, I sound like, oh, I'm high on my nose being in a diaspora now because I am a member of the diaspora. But once I used to be one of those people that live in Africa and Mali. I would see people like, yeah, you're American now. Like, you're not one of us anymore. Mm-hmm. Like,
our parents do it.
I'll tell them you changed. You remember when you used to do this? Because when you come back, you got a little flair to you. You're like, I don't do this anymore. I don't do that anymore. Or, you know, maybe you got a bit smarter with your money. Maybe you got a bit smarter with your ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, things of that nature. So it's hard to be accepted again. You know, even you remember the episode when we had with the former foreign minister Amali Kamisa, mm-hmm. where she was talking about when she got this big role as a woman being accepted.
Miss Kamala.
Because she was a member of the diaspora her whole life, kind of. She never really went to school in Mali, but she had the intellect to come and help her country. Mm-hmm. They gave her the role and people were like, nah, we don't accept you. They were having a hard time accepting her. So my question to you guys is, is that a turnoff to us living in the diaspora, people living in the diaspora, in terms of being accepted? Me personally, it's not to me because I have family there. And like I said, I've lived there. Some of my friends, we all left to study and we all plan to go back one day. So I don't see myself any different from the people living there. So I don't know about you guys. How do you guys feel?
It goes to what you just said. If you have family over there, it would definitely not be a turnoff. If you have like, you know, strong ties back to, you know, your roots or where you come from, it's not a turnoff. But let's say if you were, shipped over across the Atlantic Ocean and you've lived in the States or anywhere else for a very, very long period of time, and this is what you see, and this is what, like, the reality is for outside of just being there vacation-wise. Because it's a different experience with a country when you go in there for a vacation, mm-hmm. and it's a different experience when you go there to live your life over there. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because now you really have to, like, come to terms with the good and the bad and love both of them, yeah. in order for you to live your life over there. So that could be a turnoff to some people who don't have that strong tie, let's say, as we all do in terms of, you know, our families or our friends or something like that. That could be a turnoff for them. But to people like us, not really.
Well, Lauren, I'm sorry to cut you off so soon. We have our guest speaker today. His name is Eve. He's a young African entrepreneur who went back to Africa, and we're glad to have him today. Hello, Eve. Can you hear us?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, hello, good, hello. Good. Welcome.
How you doing? How you doing?
We're going to give you some claps. A little bit of claps. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for inviting me, guys. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, of course. We're glad to have you here. We were just having a conversation about the topic, which you already know about.
Yes.
And you certainly have a lot of experience with, you know, for somebody who went back. So, you know, I want to start by asking you, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit more to the audience to give them a bit of context, or should we get right into it?
I can do a short introduction. Mm-hmm. Nothing too long. Well, I'm Eve, and I left Mali a couple of years ago, actually in 2014, to pursue university in France and in Egypt. Then came back to Mali in 2020. Been working here since then, traveling a little. And I'm in entrepreneurship. I think we're going to get into that later, but I feel like that's enough for a short introduction.
Yeah, so yeah, let's get right into it. So as somebody who studied, like you said, in France and Egypt, what made you want to return to Mali?
Well, honestly, there are two main reasons. The first one is that the mentality which I left the country. So when I left the country in 2014, I didn't go to live abroad. I went there for a degree. So it was more like a mission, something I had to go get done and then come back. So I always had that in mind. So coming back to Mali was a goal in some ways, because I was seeing my career here rather than in the West or Western countries. The second reason is obviously family. I feel like anyone would want to live close to their family, or at least build a family in a setting where you're most comfortable in. And I feel that this is where I'm the most comfortable, and my family's all here. So I feel like it was important for me to come back here.
Okay. That's great. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you have faced some challenges in terms of, you know, trying to get to this breakthrough, you know, in your career?
Man, it's crazy.
Like, how much
it
time
is
do we have?
Crazy.
You know, because we're living here, and, you know, we hopefully, and people in the audience as well, one day, me personally, I know I've interned with you. I want to go back. That's my main goal. Yeah. But some people don't know what's waiting for them when they go back. So, you know, this is an opportunity for you to kind of, you know, maybe give advice or, you know, warn them on what's waiting for them. So.
Warn them, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, just honestly, I think the first thing people need to keep in mind when coming back to whichever country they left is that each country has its own realities when it comes to the work ethic, when it comes to societal rules and expectations, when it comes to behavior. And, you know, the whole mindset is different. So just as an example, when I went to France, I studied law there. Mm-hmm. So I have a master's in corporate law and a master's in geopolitics. And coming back to Mali, my aspiration was to become a lawyer. But then you get here and you realize that, okay, you've studied law there and you have a degree, which is a respectable one. But when you come here, you have no experience. You might have experience there. You might know the system there. It might be different in some other fields, but for my experience, you might have experience there. You might know stuff there. You might know exactly what the French law says about this case or that case. But when you come back to Mali, you have to study everything again. You have to go back to the books. You have to go back to the codes and the customs and how people work here. So it's like when you're going to go back to your country, whichever country it is, you're going to have to adapt everything you've learned through your university or your professional career to the settings and the specificity of that country, right? So the way people work here is different than there. The way, the court system is going to be different than there, even though the basis is the same, but the customs and practices are going to be different from a country to another. So you got to be ready for that. That's the first thing. And I wasn't ready. I was not ready, telling you that. So the first couple of months were more like I was shocked every day, not negatively. Uh-huh. You know, not always in a negative way. Sometimes it was negative, sometimes it was positive. But it was always like, I know stuff because I've studied stuff and I've worked there. So I had some experience. Mm-hmm. And then you come to another country, which is actually your country, but you've been trained in a different system. So coming back to your country, you feel like it's foreign at the beginning in some ways. So you have to learn how to navigate the system and how to navigate the work environment and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, so I ended up going into entrepreneurship, which wasn't planned. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, something that happened. And I felt like that's probably the best decision I made so far.
I think it's like one thing I just wanted to bring up because like you kind of sparked my brain up a little bit when you talk about how the credentials you got from coming from that other country didn't necessarily mm-hmm. translate well enough when you came back to Mali. When I feel like one thing we spoke about earlier before we got you on the phone was how like in some cases, the degrees that you'll get when you are in mm-hmm. in your African nation, whether it's for me, I'm from Senegal specifically, whatever it is, when you take that and you try to bring that degree to, you know, to a place, maybe the United States or whatever it is, it might not translate. You know, it might be looked at as not remotely qualified per se, or for, you know, in some of those senses. So for me, it's kind of, I think it's cool that you bring that up because it's like, oh, it doesn't correlate either way, you know, like in some cases you kind of, you got to revamp no matter which way you send yourself, you know, the credentials are different.
Exactly.
You
know? Exactly. And a lot of people forget to do that.
Yeah.
That's it, Lord.
Oh, hi. So my name is Lord here. And my question to you is, which one was harder for you? Adapting into a different system, especially like, you know, going back home and adapting to, you know, what the rules or what the lay of the land is, or basically changing certain aspect in which you aspire to change in terms of like your profession, in terms of law, in terms of like, okay, certain aspect of this law is not effective or it's not efficient in terms of the goal that we're trying to accomplish. And this is the way that it can work better. Which one was harder for you, adapting or implementing change?
I feel like adapting is the hardest because as soon as you adapt or understand fully the way the system works here, you actually get the ability to mix both. I usually tell my friends, we have conversation with a couple of friends of mine that have gone through the kind of the same experience as me, going abroad for university and coming back, we always say that we're kind of hybrids. So in some ways, we're Africans because we've been raised here, we've started school here, we have our basis is here. But then we went away, and those critical years from 18 to whichever age you came back to are years where you actually build yourself as an adult. And a lot of the influences you get are the influences of the country you live in. So you're kind of mixing those, like both of those experiences, and then coming back here, working with people that either are almost like you, which is not that many people, and some other people that are rooted in this way of thinking or this particular behavior or whatever. So you kind of adapt when you succeed in adapting and understanding their system and incorporating it into your ways of thinking and your experience abroad, you become more efficient than people that just try to apply the things they've learned abroad to whatever system they go back to, you know. I don't know if I'm answering your question right, but yeah.
Yeah, no, that was well said. That was well said. And that's actually a point we forgot. You, when we were speaking, you live most of your adult life when you leave away from where you were raised. So now you're becoming an adult in a different country, which is very good that you brought that up. For sure. And like, to kind of piggyback off of what Lord said, how would you say it's been in terms of people accepting you coming back to Mali, being, because, you know, from my experience, when I went back, you're kind of looked at as if you were a foreigner a bit, you know, not all the way, because I was raised there as well, but you're kind of looked, you're not the same anymore to them, you know, you're different, you know. So how was it, you know, being accepted in a professional sense? Because, you know, in a social sense, you can be accepted very easily, but once you're a professional and people know that you have something that they don't have, or, you know, this kind of complex we talk about in Mali a lot, you know, you kind of have a complex towards Westerners because you've lived there. So how would you say it was in a professional world in terms of people accepting you?
Well, it definitely, in both ways or in either ways, you're gonna be seen as a foreigner. But there's two ways or two main reactions you get. Either those that see you as a foreigner, but see that as a bad thing, you know. Some people are going to be like, you can't understand this because you're a foreigner, or you can't do this because you're a foreigner, or you cannot be like us because you're a foreigner, you know. And there are other people that will be like, you got something to bring to the table because you went abroad. You're not smarter, but you know this field better than us because you've studied it in a better university or in a better setting or whatever, you know. So you get both approach depending on who you meet and how open-minded that person is, or how how open-minded the person is. You get those two reactions. Some people will praise you for being for having studied abroad and lived abroad, and some other people will hate you for it. And you just gotta be ready for that and accept it. Some people are never gonna like it. They're always gonna feel like you went abroad, and because you went abroad, you come off as entitled in some way. Whether you feel like it or not, some people are gonna see you as entitled, and that doesn't always go well.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure, for sure. And I know due to the time difference, I know it's kind of late where you are, so we might, you know, this might be our last question. Unless you have more to say, you can always go ahead and say it. But this time, being somebody who has their master's in geopolitics, and, you know, I have worked with you in the political realm, you know, I know you might be very opinionated about this particular question, but how much impact do you think the government has in terms of helping the diaspora or attracting the diaspora back, you know, to come back? Because in our parents' generation, you know, there was this sense of nationalism where they didn't even think about staying away. They wanted to go back. But now, you know, mm-hmm. what role do you think the government plays in that, or could do better in terms of attracting people like me and you and others living in the diaspora who, you know, might be thinking about going back?
To answer that question, I'm going to just give you a little story, mm-hmm. quick story. So right now I've opened the only cigar store in Mali.
Congratulations, by the way. Congrats. If you want to shout it out, go ahead. Go ahead, shout it out.
It's El Mambi Cigars.
Okay.
So basically what happened is that I've always been a big cigar fan. Everywhere I travel, I smoke cigars. I go to cigar shops and stuff like that. So when I came back and when I decided to go into entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. I did a couple of things. But one day I was just like, I need this in my country because we don't have it. And it has to be the first one. And everyone I talked to about it were telling me that I was crazy.
Okay.
Because living abroad made me think that people in Mali are inclined to change their mentality, which is not true. Mm-hmm. You know, that's literally what everyone was telling me. You know, people are not ready for that. People don't want stuff that come from abroad too much. They are too kind of westernized, you know. And that kind of plays in the fact that a part of the population is not ready for change or not willing to go towards change. When it comes to the government, a couple of years ago, we had, I've seen one of your podcast where you were interviewing our former Minister of Foreign Affairs, mm-hmm. who was a diaspora person who came back to Mali as well. There was a whole wave of people like her, highly qualified people that came back to Mali to work, to try to better the condition of people, to you know, bring about change. Mm-hmm. But the response was not always as good as we hoped it to be. You know, there's always a part of people that would say that the ways and method that diaspora people use are not really responding to the needs of the Malians or the ways the Malians evolve and stuff like that. So the government does a good job at trying mm-hmm. to attract diaspora people, but we have a long way to go and a lot of work to do in motivating those diaspora people to come back and learn first before trying to apply anything. Because a lot of people that come from abroad think that because they went to good universities, not everyone, obviously, but a lot of people think that because they went to good universities in Western countries or developed countries or whatever, mm-hmm. they know better than the locals, which is not always true, because the locals know the problems we're facing. They know the actual ways in which the systems work. And in order to implement any type of change, you need to understand the system first. Mm-hmm. So I feel like whether the government does a good job or not, we as the diaspora or we as the people coming back, we need to better ourselves in understanding the system and the locals before we try to do anything. Because if we don't work with them, we're not going to become local. And mm-hmm. the goal for someone who comes from the diaspora is to become a local. Mm-hmm. is to be one of the people on the ground and actually embrace the life of a Malian or a Senegalese or, you know, whatever country you're going back to. And I feel like that's probably the most important part of it.
That was well said, Eve. That was well said. You know, we are getting ready to wrap up, but we want to thank you so much for coming on here and sharing your opinion. You know, not many people would like to speak in this magnitude, and you've done it in a beautiful way, might I add as well.
Thank you so much.
As you always do, of course. You've always been a good speaker. I've told you that. you know, do you have any words you want to share with our audience and people that may be listening who are living in diaspora?
Yeah,
Yeah, or if you have some merch for us too, it's cool.
Well, the only thing I would say is going back to your country or to any other country in Africa is always a good idea. Mm. But you got to prepare yourself. Don't just get up and jump. You know, some people would tell you do that. I would advise against it. You know, go to the country you want to go to a couple of times, visit it, ask questions, meet people, and then get ready to go back. Because there's a lot of things to be done, a lot of things to be done. And some of those things are simple things for anyone who's lived abroad. Mm. And we can do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sounds good. Sounds good. Thank you. So basically, do your research and then come back. But the idea, like I always say, is to come back. And I agree with you, Eve.
Yeah.
Thank you very much again for coming on here. And we look forward to hearing more from you. You know, we'll definitely let you know. And it's for you to come on and share your opinion for sure.
And keep up the good work. Your podcast is amazing. I've listened to a couple of things. It's really good. I like it.
Thank you. Thank you. Now you're part of it. So,
yep.
Thank you very much. So
if it all goes bad, we could blame a little bit on you.
Love that.
All right. Thank you, man. And good night.
You guys take care.
That was
cool.
A lovely episode. Eh?
Yeah. I mean, it's good to hear from people who are actually trying to go back, this idea of going back. And you can see that it's not as easy as it seems because he has to change his whole career. He has to change the course of what he was doing. He's a trained lawyer, and he had to become an entrepreneur now because of some of the difficulties that he's faced, you know?
Yeah.
And I hope our audience sees that. And with that being said, thank you again for tuning in. This is Africa.
Yes. Yes.
You know,
it is.
You can reach us on Instagram at t.i.a_pod uh-huh. and on Facebook at This is Africa Podcast. Mm-hmm. And we are available on all streaming platforms. Please subscribe, share with your friends so they can gain more knowledge about Africa.
Oh,
how about
yeah.
that?
Gain more knowledge. How about that? That was cool.
Yep. Thank you again. And we hope to see you on the next episode.
Peace.
Pick them one by one. Make me bust my gun. Poison us like a long python. Gunfire in 911 dying. We never let the sound of them sirens. They only respect.